especially for developing country like China, India, the coal fleet are much younger.
No slowing for big Asian coal users. It's Friday, November 19th. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson. You'll find us online at VOA Asia Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. Also ahead, small pollutants in New Zealand have a big impact. Fewer internet services in China. Cycling for education. It's all on today's VOA Asia. One of the takeaways from this year's COP26 climate summit in Glasgow, Scotland, is that much of the world is actively planning for a world without oil and coal. But as VOA Asia's Jessica Stone reports, some of the world's worst polluters, at least for now, apparently still need fossil fuels.
Global fuel shortages are hitting consumer wallets with higher gasoline prices.
It's a really big problem because, gas prices are like about $4 now.
Meanwhile, the world's largest carbon emitter, China, is increasing coal production to provide heat this winter.
High energy prices only reinforce the urgent need to diversify sources, double down on clean energy development, and adapt promising new clean energy technologies.
But U.S. President Joe Biden's optimistic view has not been matched by significant cuts among major emitting nations. Neither China, India, or Russia signed on to the U.S.-European Union pledge at the recent COP26 to reduce methane gas emissions by 30% by 2030.
I think a lot of people, including myself, are not very surprised.
Rena Tui of the Center for Global Sustainability at the University of Maryland says Beijing won't announce additional carbon cuts until it can meet its existing commitment. China is seeking self-sufficiency in renewables to maintain political stability, she says, noting that nearly half of its electricity production comes from coal.
Coal has come to an end energy system, but how to retire the existing large infrastructure is another challenge, because especially for developing country like China, India, the coal fleet are much younger.
Like China, India is giving itself a longer ramp to transition away from fossil fuels. India's prime minister announced at the Glasgow conference it's giving itself 50 years to achieve net zero emissions. The deadline is decades after that of many other countries, but New Delhi argues it still has millions to lift out of poverty and has not polluted the planet for as long as the U.S. and Europe.
In the historical context, India is not a significant contributor. So its cumulative emissions stands at 3%.
Nalima Jain is an expert on India's energy sector at the Center for Strategic and International Studies.
It has been very vocal about not phasing out coal, and rightly so. Coal fuels 2/3 of India's power generation.
While developing nations remain wedded to coal, the pressure to develop reliable, affordable sources of renewable energy for all nations is only likely to increase going forward. Jessica Stone for VOA News, Washington.
Details about the environment and our impact on it are always changing. Stay on top of developments by following our Twitter stream at VOA Asia. We're also on Facebook at VOA Asia, and check us out on our website, voanews.com. These are among some of the top Asia headlines you'll find right now when you visit voanews.com. ASEAN states object as China lobbies for Myanmar junta to join summit, according to sources. China Coast Guard blocks Philippine boats in disputed sea. Experts say China may attempt to use North Korea to counter the United States. U.S. Defense Secretary says China's hypersonic missile test drew concerns. Experts urge Australia to ban supermarket cigarette sales. You'll find expanded coverage of these stories and so much more when you visit us at Facebook at VOA Asia, Twitter, Instagram, and our voanews.com website. We have more VOA Asia. New Zealand scientists have found that microplastics have a direct impact on global warming. They published the first study linking airborne plastic fragments and fibers to climate change this week, and they also found that microplastics, which have been widely detected on land and in rivers and in oceans, are detrimental to health. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
This is the first study to investigate the effects of airborne microplastics on climate. The plastic fragments and fibers are carried by the wind. Microplastics are created by the breakdown of carpets, clothing and paint, as well as tyres and larger plastics that degrade over time. Researchers in New Zealand have found that, for now, their influence on climate change is small. But if the global average concentration of microplastics increases to levels already seen in some cities, the impact will be significant, they say. Laura Revelle is an atmospheric chemist at the University of Canterbury in New Zealand. She says the airborne particles do affect the environment.
They are good at scattering solar radiation or sunlight back to space, which causes a minor cooling influence on Earth's climate. And they also are quite good at absorbing the infrared radiation that's emitted by the Earth, which means they also contribute to the greenhouse effect. But overall, it's that interaction with sunlight that plays out. So overall, they have a very, very small cooling influence on Earth's climate.
Revelle says laboratory studies have shown that microplastics can damage lung tissue. Aquatic organisms such as zooplankton can also mistake the plastic for food, which can interfere with the ocean's carbon cycle.
I wouldn't want anyone to get the idea that this is actually a good thing in terms of climate change and that they're offsetting the effects of greenhouse gas warming, because for a start, the effect is very small in the present day. And then there are also these other damaging effects to humans and to other ecosystems.
Researchers have estimated that globally, 5 billion tons of plastic waste have accumulated in landfills and the natural environment to date. They've warned that amount could double over the next 30 years. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney, Australia.
Happening now in Asia, dozens of relatives of two civilians killed in a controversial gunfight in Indian-controlled Kashmir held a protest in the disputed region's main city, pleading with authorities to return the bodies so they could bury them. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. It's great to have you along with us today on VOA Asia. This month, the Silicon Valley internet service provider Yahoo closed all of its services in China following LinkedIn's pullout announcement in October and earlier blockages of Google content. Ralph Jennings has more about the changes in this report, narrated by VOA's Amy Hybels.
Analysts say China now depends almost entirely on its own online content providers, as the number of big foreign companies in the market, such as Yahoo and LinkedIn, keep dwindling, giving the government a boost in controlling the internet. Last week, Yahoo closed all of its services in China. In an emailed statement, Yahoo cited an increasingly challenging business and legal environment in China. Many Yahoo services were largely blocked in China, where the email and search engine provider has operated since 1999. Danny Levinson, a Beijing-based head of technology at the seed investment firm Matoka Capital, remarked that his first reaction was he didn't know Yahoo was still alive in China. Chinese netizens seldom use Yahoo or other major Silicon Valley internet services, especially for media and communications, as domestic rivals have flourished over the past two decades. The government can monitor local providers for what it considers subversive content by calling in company managers for discipline. Chinese use China-based WeChat for the bulk of their daily communication and watch TikTok videos instead of YouTube. Kaiser Kuo is a U.S.-based podcaster who has worked in Chinese tech.
They had all the ingredients in place. You had a really large, very fast-growing market. There was a need for people to come in with services that were catered to Chinese language users. On top of that, it was so cutthroat that foreign internet companies just couldn't compete very well.
Chinese mass media have said the country aims to become technologically self-sufficient by 2030 and get around U.S. government bans on doing business with some of its flagship companies. China has monitored the internet for two decades by blocking websites and filtering social feeds to intercept anti-government material. Its latest effort, the data security law, restricts outflows of sensitive data from China and requires internet operators to give their internal data to law enforcement agencies. Zenon Capron is the director of the finance industry research firm Capron Asia.
If there was a platform that was willing to go into China and completely cede control to the Chinese government and regulators to manage that, I think there would be an opportunity to grow. But so far, most of the companies have chosen to not do.
China previously blocked Facebook, Google, and most other global social media sites and search engines, as well as flagship Western news websites. Ma Rui is the founder of the San Francisco-based consultancy TechBuzz in China.
The media ones haven't been really there for a long time in force. Now it's like because of the regulations that are hitting everyone, not just foreign companies.
Users in China can still access foreign internet content by using a virtual private network or VPN, but authorities search out and block overseas-based VPNs that are not authorized for specific companies doing business in China. I'm Amy Heibels in Washington.
This news from VOA Asia. The head of the Women's Tennis Association voiced concern over an email it received in which Chinese professional tennis player Peng Shui was said to deny her previous allegations of sexual assault. The message could not be authenticated, and her whereabouts are not known. You'll find this in all the big stories through the day on VOA Asia Twitter and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. We continue with VOA Asia. For girls in Pakistan, getting an education can be more difficult because schools are often located far from home. VOA's Mohammed Saki brings us the story of a teacher who is trying to help her students solve that problem. It's narrated by Bejan Hamdard.
It's rare to see women riding motorcycles and bicycles on the streets of highly conservative and male-dominated Pakistan. But with her family's support, local teacher Sadafnaz is turning heads as she zips through the streets of Sindh province's Goatki on the way to school. Naz says it was her lifelong passion to learn how to ride a motorcycle as a way to feel independent.
Now I can travel anywhere, in any city. I am not at all bothered when I ride around. I can even drive my parents to relatives, and if I need to go to the city, I can do it myself.
Naz, however, does not consider motorcycling solely as a personal interest. She has taught the girls at this Mirpur Matilla school how to ride their bikes to school so that they're not reliant on others.
In the beginning, I would come to school with my father on a bike. My school teachers taught me how to bike, and now I bike both ways. It has saved me a lot of trouble since I live 5 miles away.
The students who bike to school make it in time and return home in time so that they can be helpful at home, too.
Naz feels that giving children, especially girls, the opportunity to come to school on their own tackles a major problem in the community.
With kids learning to bike, we have addressed a problem, that of them being late for school because the older members of the family have to go to their jobs and some have to work in farmlands.
Naz's ability to ride a motorcycle in traditional communities where women who venture out alone often face obstacles is a wonder to many locals. Her family and the school's principal, Abdul Karim Baksh, have encouraged and strengthened Naz's determination to overcome these challenges.
We listened to them for about 10 to 12 years. Now they have realized that whether it's a girl or a boy, each one has a right to learn to bike. It's benefiting them as well.
Some families initially resisted efforts to teach young girls to ride. However, the principal says many have changed their minds.
Now they say it's okay, but before they would call it as something going against their traditions. But now we have arrived at a stage where people have stopped questioning us altogether.
Both Naz and Principal Baksh believe that taking this first step is critical for a social or societal change to take hold. In a rural part of the country, the two of them have done just that by giving students, particularly schoolgirls, the opportunity to learn a crucial skill. From Mohammed Saqib in Sindh, Pakistan, Bejan Hamdard, VOA News.
That's our program for today and for this week. You've been listening to VOA Asia. Continue online. You'll find us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. We also thank our team, Managing Editor Diane Gao, Keith Lane, Chris Cascao, Amy Heibels, and Jessica Stowe. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. We hope you have a great day ahead. Be safe. Be well.